Matthew chapter 14, I'm going to walk our way through a few verses tonight, Lord willing, and we're talking about the book of Matthew. Matthew's a Jew, writing primarily to Jews. I've said this almost every time, and that's been quite a few times, but he is writing also to us. He's writing to the world, but primarily to the Jews. We should thank the Lord for the Jews, I promise you that. This book is a Jewish book, the Old Testament. The law was written to the Jews. It was not written to the world. God's desire was to work through Israel to reach the world for his sake. Israel failed. Now the Lord has turned to Gentiles, and primarily, specifically, I guess I should say, he has turned to the church. The Lord's desire for the church is to reach the world with the gospel. Unfortunately, we also, like Israel, are failing miserably. But in this time when Matthew's writing, he's still writing to the Jews, and Jesus at the beginning is offering the kingdom still. In these verses, we'll begin reading in verse 13. Jesus performs a miracle. You talk about a miracle. It's astounding. And this is the only miracle that Jesus performed or did that's recorded in all four Gospels. So there's something unique about this. There's something about this. God doesn't want us to miss it. Verse 13, when Jesus heard of it, of course this is speaking about John the Baptist being killed, he departed thence by ship into a desert place apart. And when the people had heard thereof, they followed him on foot out of the cities. Jesus took his disciples, boarded a ship, and left. Now, some people have been dumb enough to say that Jesus left because he was afraid of Herod. Herod had killed John the Baptist. And now Jesus comes, and Jesus is preaching primarily the same message that John the Baptist preached. And they say that Jesus heard about John the Baptist and how Herod had killed him, and in fear he ran. Well, that's just about as dumb as you can be. Jesus wasn't afraid of anybody, including Herod. In fact, later on, he calls Herod a fox. He said, you go tell that fox that I touch people, I heal people, I'm raising people from the dead. You tell him what I'm doing and see what he says. Jesus didn't leave out of fear. He left because it was not his time to stand. It was not his time to overthrow Rome. He knows, of course, sees the writing on the wall, and he sees that Israel's rejecting him, and as I've already said, he's slowly now turning toward the Gentiles, and he knows that the kingdom is going to be set aside, and it's not time to stand, it's not time to fight, it's not time to overthrow Rome. So he knows if Herod comes, if you will, and mixes it up with him, it'll make matters worse. So he leaves, but he also leaves because he wants to get along with his disciples. We'll be finding out that Jesus is turning away from the multitudes and more towards his disciples. It's about a little bit over a year now before he's going to be crucified. And he wants to use every second wisely. And he wants to pour himself into those 12 disciples, really 11 disciples. So he boards a ship with his disciples, and they go to a secluded place. It is called there a desert place. Mark tells us that Jesus is seeking for a place to rest in Mark 6:31. He's wanting some time away from the crowds. Understand that. He's tired. They're tired. They have run. They have done. He's performed miracles. He's been bombarded. People have flocked to him. When he tries to rest, there's someone else, there's another need, there's another person crying for him. And he and his disciples desperately need rest. So they leave where they're at and get on the ship and go and try to find a desert place. They need rest. They need to recuperate. I'll say it again, it's not time to fight. It's important to know when to fight and when not to. When to stand and when to to lay back. Jesus had that wisdom about it. And now they go, he goes primarily seeking for a secluded place. That's not an easy task. The land that he's in is about 50 miles long and about 25 miles wide. And in this small area, there's over 200 cities. And each of those cities, from my understanding, is about 15,000 or more people. So there's not a whole lot of secluded places, especially when you're Jesus. And everybody knows you can heal and do miracles and do stuff for me. Boy, he's always flocked, but he goes to find a secluded place in this area, and they find somewhere, but the rest is short-lived, because it says there that those people heard that he was there and saw where he was going, and they followed him and the disciples. Look in verse 14. And Jesus went forth and saw a great multitude and was moved with compassion toward them, and he healed their sick. Another thing to compound the issue here, John tells us in John 6, 3 and 4, that it's during the Passover season. It's a few days before Passover. Well, Passover is a time when all Jewish males have to report to Jerusalem. And they don't just come by themselves. Generally, they bring the entire family. I don't mean this how it sounds. It's an outing for the males and their family. I'm not talking about going and having a good party or going to everybody's day, but it is a religious festivity, and everybody looks forward to it. And it's something they are required to do. So all the people of Israel are bombarding Jerusalem, and in the middle of all that moving is Jesus and his disciples. So my point is, and so is John's and Matthew's, there's a lot of people around. There's a whole lot of people, and Jesus, if you will, is trying to seclude himself to get a little bit of rest, and it just does not work. The Jews come in multitudes. In fact, that's exactly what Matthew says in verse 14, and saw a great multitude. Well, that tells us a little bit about this feeding of the 5,000. The ones that are counted are the men, and there's 5,000 men. That's not counting children. That's not counting wives. And in that day, children were considered a blessing of the Lord, and they all had a bunch of them. It was as though God was blessing them, so they just kept having children. So each family generally had a lot of children. So you think 5,000 men, and then even if three-quarters of them had wives, and if three-quarters of them had children, there's no telling. And to be honest, even though we do not know the entire number that was fed, Matthew said it was a great multitude. There's a whole bunch of people. If you want to guess 15 or 20,000, that's fine, but it may have even been more than that, because again, Passover is coming, and they're moving through town, and they hear about him. And saw a great multitude and was moved with compassion toward them. That word compassion means a heartfelt moving. It wasn't like he said, well, I just feel obligated. They're sick and I'm Jesus and I can heal them. It'd be the right thing to do. It's not what it is. He is moved. He literally feels their pain. Their need touches him. He is genuinely touched by their infirmities. And that's exactly what it kind of sounds like to me when it talks about he is a high priest, or we have not a high priest that cannot be touched with the feeling of our infirmities. But it was in all points tempted like as we are, yet without sin. He knows how it feels because he's experienced it. And when we're going through trials, he feels it. He feels it. He truly loves us. Again, it's not obligation, it's not, well, it's the right thing to do. He was moved with compassion. And the bad thing about it is most of these people are coming not because they love him or because they want to know more about the Messiah or more about how to get right with God. Most of them, according to John chapter 6 and verse 1 and 2, are coming because they know he can heal them. They're coming for a sale. Listen to me. They're worn out. They're tired. And he's trying to find somewhere to rest a little while. And here come people who come selfishly, and he still is moved, and he heals them. He breaks his rest because somebody needs him. They had no intention of following him completely. They just wanted what they could get. And it amazes me that Jesus, knowing their hearts, still helped them. What a good God we have. He felt their need. He needed rest. His people needed rest. But the need was more important than their rest. One thing for sure, if you can heal people, you can expect people coming after you. Look in verse 15. And when it was evening, his disciples came to him saying, "This is a desert place, and time is now past. Send the multitude away that they may go into the villages and buy themselves victuals." As the day wears on, the disciples begin to get concerned about this group of people, this multitude of people, because they know, well, they've been here at least most of the day, if not all the day, and they've traveled. There's no telling how many days they've traveled, and they know they have not eaten, and they're tired and weary and hungry. And the disciples say, "Something needs to be done. These people are going to faint if we don't somehow help them, or if they don't get help somehow." So they come to Jesus, and they more or less say, "These people need to go away and get some food." John tells us a little bit more about this conversation. As Jesus is talking to his disciples about the multitudes, he speaks to Philip, and no doubt all the other disciples heard it. And he asks Philip, or he says to Philip, "You go and help them." But he also asks this, "Where will they get bread?" He asks Philip a question, and Philip didn't have the answer. Jesus is trying to get them to understand the need. He's trying to get them to understand the situation. It is a dire situation. And he gets Philip to thinking, and he gets his disciples to thinking. And Philip's response in John is, 200 penny worth of bread is not sufficient for that everyone may take a little. They're talking about the crowd and them getting hungry. Jesus says to Philip and to in the audience of all the disciples, "Where will they get this food? How can they get it? Where will it come from?" And Philip says, 200 penny worth is not enough to where everybody can have a little crumb. Now, maybe 200 penny worth is what they had in their little bag that they called the treasury. I don't know. I'm not sure where Philip got that figure, but Philip was a man of figures. He was a realistic man, which means there's not a lot of faith involved. So he says, if we spend everything we have and buy food, there won't be enough for everybody to even have a crumb. Point is, it's a bad situation. It's a situation that we don't know the answer to. Their solution finally was, the disciples said to Jesus, "Send them away. Let them go to the cities and buy their own food." And that's an easy way out. And the disciples said, "I know what we'll do. Let's get rid of them. I'll handle this problem. Let's get rid of the problem." And that's kind of how we do so many times. The way we try and handle the problem is get rid of the problem. Give it to somebody else. And that's what these disciples are trying to do. They want to just get rid of the problem, make it go away. Verse 16, "But Jesus said unto them, 'They need not depart. Give ye them to eat.'" How in the world could Jesus say this? He said, "They don't need to depart. You give them food. You give them what they need." But the disciples didn't have what they needed. The disciples didn't have the food enough to provide for this great multitude. Jesus tells them to do something they can't do. Have you ever heard anybody say, gee, God will never tell you to do something you can't do? Well, that ain't right. He told them to do something he couldn't do. Now how? Hey, he'll never tell us to do something we can't do with his help. That makes a difference. He said, they don't need to go anywhere. You give them the food. He's trying to get them to face the facts. He's trying to get them to realize they do not have what this crowd needs. They cannot handle the problem. They have nothing to take care of the situation. He's trying to get them to learn a lesson of helplessness, of not having what's needed. Welcome to the family of God. Welcome to the world. Welcome to Christianity. We live every day, if we'll open our eyes, saying we ought to realize, I can't make it this day. I don't have what I need to serve God today. I need help from Him. Jesus is trying to get them to learn that lesson, the lesson of helplessness, that I do not have what's needed. I do not have sufficient supply. If the need is met, it must come from Him. Verse 17. And they say unto him, we have here but 5 loaves and 2 fishes. Now, again in John 6, John tells us a little bit more about the conversation. Andrew tells Jesus about a little boy who has his lunch in John 6, 9. And this little boy's lunch is about like a happy meal. It consists of 5 little barley loaves, pretty much like a little biscuit, and 2 small fish. It indicates the size. It's literally a lunch for a little boy. And all the crowd, that's all they have. And that's what it says there. They say unto him, we have here but 5 loaves and 2 fishes. The loaves is barley loaves, which is the cheapest grain. This undoubtedly was a underprivileged boy, I guess, put it that way. So here's a multitude of hungry people, and all they have is a happy meal. Could you understand that ain't enough? Ain't enough for me, let alone a multitude. Look at verse 18. He said, bring them hither to me. What's he saying? Bring the lunch to me. The loaves and the fishes, bring them to me. He asked for the little boy's lunch. We need to learn how to give what we have to the Lord. One thing I mentioned about Brother John today. Johnny, can you understand what I'm saying? You not get upset or think I'm trying to be mean toward him. He was a simple man, and what he did was relatively small things, but his small things were so significant. A little phone call or a little gift or a handshake or a smile or a few words. But what I'm saying is he brought what he had, Johnny, and gave it to the Lord. And that's one thing we need to learn, to give what little bit we have. I don't know what you have, don't know how wise you are, how smart you are, how good looking you are, don't know about your personality plus and all that stuff, but I do know this, all we have is like a little boy's lunch. It ain't much to it. But if we can just give it to Jesus. He said, bring them hither to me. What a valuable lesson to learn to give Jesus what we have, our little bit. Verse 19. And he commanded the multitude to sit down on the grass and took the 5 loaves and 2 fishes and looking up to heaven he blessed and broke and gave the loaves to his disciples and the disciples to the multitude. Jesus has them sit down on the grass. The disciples, he tells the disciples, sit the people down in groups. Mark 6:40 tells us they set them down in groups of 100 and groups of 50. So literally it was like a group here, sectioned off, and a path, and a group here, and a path, and a path, and a group, and a path, and a group, and a path. It's like a checkerboard of people, evenly designated and sitting down in designated spots on grass. He tells them to sit them down. I believe he did it for 3 reasons at least. You probably could come up with your own reasons, but I think first he did it to keep things orderly. Can you imagine if Jesus got these loaves. Let's just stick with the loaves instead of loaves and fishes. Let's just stick with the loaves. And he starts passing out. And people that's closest see that the loaf is not diminishing. He breaks off a piece, and there's still as much there as before. He breaks off another piece, and there's still as much there as before. He breaks off another piece, and that spreads through the crowd. You know what's going to happen? They're stampeding him. Food, free food. So he sets them down and more or less tells them to stay there. And as he distributes to the disciples and the disciples to the people, it's done in order. The Bible talks about us doing all things decently and in order. There's an order to things. There's an order of a church. You don't just decide to do something and do it. I was so dumb when I first got saved. I'm almost ashamed to admit this. But you know how dumb I am, so I'll go ahead and tell you. I didn't know. I just got saved, and I wouldn't do anything. I, in my own mind, went and made a new sign for the front of the church and went and had it put up. And didn't even ask anybody about it. To tell you the truth, the sign they had up was a lot nicer than the one I had made. And I think now, how in the world could I be so dumb? Well, I didn't know order. I didn't know how things, I didn't know the procedure. There's a certain procedure in the body of Christ, in the church. You don't just do something because you want to do it. And Jesus said, there's order. Things are done decently. There's not chaos. Not everybody doing what they want to do because they want to do it. It's order. Jesus had them sit down in groups because he was trying to keep the chaos down and to keep everything in order. Stop a riot. Secondly, first I think he did it to keep everything in order. Secondly, I believe he set them down in groups to where he made sure everybody was fed. Now can you understand? If I'm Jesus and you multiply this, everybody on this side of you will just stand up if you feel like it. You have to kind of imagine this. Now let's say that instead of 20, there's 2,000. Now can you understand? Even right behind Mike, you can't see. If I start handing food and they start passing it out, somebody back in the back may miss out because I can't see them. I can't make sure. Okay, y'all sit down. Now let's say the same 2,000 is here, and Jesus gives to the disciples, and the disciples gives to the people, and they're up above the crowd where they can see, and they make sure every single person gets the food. He does it to make sure everybody's fed and nobody gets left out. He has this order. He sets these people up in groups to make sure that everybody gets food and no one is left out because they can see who is getting food and who isn't. That little boy right there, he's left out. That little lady over there, make sure she gets some. Second reason, and then the third reason, I think he set them down in groups to where they could see where the food's coming from. Now, can you imagine that group standing once again? If he didn't sit them down, this whole group, at the first, they would see it's coming from the disciples. They wouldn't know where it's coming from. But as that food goes back through the crowd and mingles through people back toward the back, they don't know where it come from. All they know is somebody beside them handed them a piece of bread or a piece of fish. But when he set them down, the disciples was above them. Everybody there knew where it came from. They knew it came from Jesus. They knew where it came from. Jesus took the bread and the fish. John said that he blessed the bread. He asked a blessing. Notice that he didn't pile it up in a big pile and say, everybody come get it. But again, it's like he had a loaf and he broke off a piece, broke off a piece, broke off a piece, and the loaf was just as big after he broke off 10 pieces as when he didn't break off one. It did not diminish. It was like the widow's meal. She just kept getting meal and getting meal, and she looked down in that barrel, and there's still meal there. It didn't diminish. It did not waste. Verse 20. And they all did eat and were filled, and they took up the fragments that remained 12 baskets full. They were all filled. It literally means to be full to where you don't want another bite. I've been there before. My best, most desirable food didn't even look good because I was so full. And I got to get somewhere to get there. They didn't just have a little bit, but they had so much that they didn't want another bite. They had all they wanted. Now understand, everybody, the great multitude, had all they wanted. You know what that means? So did that little boy. That little boy is included in the multitude. He literally ate more than he would have had he kept his lunch. His lunch had been enough for a little snack. But when he ate what was distributed to the crowd and to him, he got more. We need to learn how to give things to God. We need to be funnels and not buckets. Funnels, just it's a channel where things run through. When God gives, we just pass it on. That's how it needs to be with us. Some have suggested, again, not very wisely, that when the little boy brought out his lunch, everybody saw his generosity and everybody else brought out their lunch. They'd hidden it and been selfish, but now their heart has been stirred by this little boy's generosity, and now everybody brings out their lunch and everybody has enough. Well, number one, the Bible doesn't say that, so it's dumb. And number two, the next day, people, those same people that were there and got fed, come to Jesus wanting more food. Well, now, if they just ate their own lunch, they wouldn't come to Jesus for more food. You know what happened? That's exactly what the Bible says. Jesus multiplied. Look in verse 21. Let me get a touch on this. Took up fragments that remained, 12 baskets full. These were small baskets that weren't big baskets, a little basket that literally, they carried their lunches, they carried their goods, they carried their needs. It was a small basket. And when everybody had eaten all they wanted and nobody wanted anything else, they took up the fragments and there were 12 baskets of leftovers. How many disciples were there? There was a basket for each disciple. Could I understand something with you? Jesus not only performed a miracle, he stopped it at just the right time. I mean, all these leftovers are mingled through the crowd. And when they take it up, it is exactly enough to fill each of these baskets. He not only has power to change, he can restrain that power exactly how it needs to be. I sure do like him, I'll tell you that. I thank the Lord for our God. He took up the leftovers. There's no waste, verse 21. And they that had eaten were about 5,000 men beside men and children. Women and children. And they that had eaten were about 5,000 men beside women and children. So the Holy Spirit just tells us a little bit about how many people were there. Again, 5,000 wives, children, Passover. Plus, Matthew's already told us, there was a great multitude. He wasn't exaggerating. There's a whole lot of people there. And everyone was fed. The bread was brought and blessed and broken, and there was a bounty. I want to real quickly deal with some things, I've called them points to ponder. In other words, what can we learn from this? It's not just to fill our brain with logic or with information. What does the feeding of the 5,000 mean to us? Well, the first thing, rest is needed. Jesus, who had more to do than he could do, and had many people who needed him, and by the way, he came to help people, needed rest. And the disciples whom he is trying to train to be good to people needed rest. And he seeks a place to rest. I'll tell you, our bodies wear out. If you doubt that, ask a few people here tonight that have worked or run all day, and your body right now, you're not sure you're moving. You're not sure you're awake. Our bodies need rest. Our bodies are designed where we need rest. And if we don't rest, it'll cost us. We need to take time to rest. The second thing I see in this, as far as things that we're to learn, is fellowship is important. Jesus did not just take his disciples to a secluded place just to where they could rest, but they could have fellowship together. Away from the crowd, away from the hustle and bustle, away from everybody needing me and needing them. Fellowship's important. We talked a little bit about it after the funeral today down in the fellowship hall. Ladies and men scurrying around, preparing the food and getting it out. And it was mentioned more than once of what fellowship does to Christians. Jesus drew these disciples apart from the crowd because Christian fellowship was important and is vital to us. We need it. Do not be a loner. Do you hear that, Rick Shoemaker? We need Christian fellowship. Another thing I think we can learn from this is God cares. He was tired. Jesus was worn out. He was exhausted, but his heart was moved when somebody needed him, when somebody had a lack, when somebody had a need. He was truly, truly moved. Even though he needed rest, their need was more important. He cared, and he still does care. He was weary, and he was watching, and he was willing, and he worked. I think another thing that this story tells us is that God can. Jesus was able to do it. I mean, you take a loaf and tear off some, and it's still just as long, just as much there, and feed multitudes with a little lunch. That's pretty good. The God that created the universe, the one that spoke the universe into existence, created bread and fish that day. Literally, God can. When the supply is lacking in your life, remember it's no problem to God. He can do what's needed. There's nothing too big with God. What God asked of the disciples, he provided. And they fed the multitude as a result. God never asks us for anything that we cannot do without his help. God can. Do you feel like sometimes that life is too much for you? Do you feel like it's just the job is too big or the task is too big or the problems are too overwhelming? Well, welcome to life. But it's not to God. Trust him. He can. The psalmist said it like this, "Why art thou cast down, O my soul? Why art thou disquieted within me? Hope in God." Sometimes we need to shake ourselves with that kind of verse. Another thing that we can learn from this feeding of the 5,000 is God is a God of order. Again, he set them down in groups. He is a God of order. He does things right. He's not chaotic, even though sometimes it seems like he is, and we do not understand his structure or his work. He still is a God of order, and he wants us to do things decently in order. Another thing we can learn is God is not wasteful. I mean, good gracious, he created the food. It would have been easy to just say, okay, fellas, let's go. If you've had too much and you got some left, throw it to the birds. Birds will eat it. Just throw it down. But he didn't. God's not wasteful. He does not want us to waste anything, not just finances, but anything we have of his. Nothing was wasted, not one crumb. Another thing we can learn, God should be obeyed. Can you imagine what those disciples thought when he said, sit them down? Sit them down in hundreds and sit them down in fifties. I bet they thought, why? What is he doing now? But you know what they did do? They obeyed. And a lot of times God will tell us to do something that doesn't make a lick of sense. But he has something in mind. We just need to obey him whether it makes sense or not. Learn to obey him whether you understand what he's saying or not. And you know what will happen? You may just get blessed with some extra food and some extra fishes and some extra loaves. Another thing we can learn, and I'm just about done. Everyone was used. Even Judas. Jesus took the food, gave it to the disciples. The disciples gave it to the people. Every disciple was used. And if you're a disciple, he wants to use you. Somehow, he has a task for you. He has a part for you to do. He has a job for you to do. You are not excluded. I want to ask you and myself, are we doing what he wants us to do? Another thing we can learn, we must be broken if we're to be used. He tore the bread. He broke the bread. He could have never fed them had the bread not been broken. And so it is with us. When he breaks you, it hurts. Have you ever been broken by God? You say, it hurts. It hurts. Man, he does a good job. He does a thorough job. And I've asked him like the black preacher, Lord, don't stop working on me just because I whine. Do a thorough job. Break me all the way. He can't use us until we break us. He took the bread and he tore the bread and he transformed the bread. He couldn't do a thing until he took it. Somebody gave it to him. He couldn't do any transforming until he tore it, but then it was transformed. We must be broken. The next thing we should give. The disciples had that bread in their hand and those fish. They were hungry too, by the way. But they gave it to somebody else. But I want to point out something. I want to ask you a question. What about Jesus? He was hungry. He needed food too. I am convinced, I believe this with all my heart, those disciples that got the leftovers, I think each of them gave a little bit to Jesus where he could eat too. They not only gave to the multitude, I believe they gave to Jesus. So we should give. We shouldn't, again, I said again, we should be funnels and not buckets. And then lastly, God deserves the glory. We sure would have been dumb for any of those disciples to go away that next day and say, man, we sure did a good job yesterday, didn't we? Do you see how satisfied those people were? A lot of them thanked me. I believe I gave out more than you did. That sure would have been dumb. It all came from God, and he deserved the glory. And I promise you again, as they were sitting down, they took that bread and those fish, and they knew where it came from. Every bite they took, they knew this came from Jesus. What he does through us, man, we better thank him. We ever think, well, I obeyed the Lord, and if I hadn't obeyed the Lord, he wouldn't have been able to move. Man, we're walking on dangerous ground. Head was eaten by worms because he wouldn't give God the glory. Ooh, I don't like the way that sounds. Nebuchadnezzar went mad because he said, look what I've done. God gets the glory. He deserves it. If God ever does anything through you, you find somewhere to hide and say, God, thank you for working. Let's stand together. Thank you for listening to Wayle.